Super Gamecast 64, episode 119. Today on the show, it's Best of 28 Awards Part 2. That's right, we're keeping the award trains going. Is everyone excited to give out some awards
today?
Dude,
I am so excited, you should see my nipples.
Tyler, are you excited?
No.
Well then, let's hit the DJ, and let's see just how exciting this episode's gonna get. DJ... Every time it gets better, I think. The DJ song.
Yeah. Oh, I mean,
well.
Already, we're
on. Well, what a lot of folks don't know about the show is that the DJ is a real person who sits in the booth with us every time we record. The booth being this basement. Every time being every single week that we're here every Tuesday to record, never missing a single Tuesday. He's here. He plays it live.
He's better than me.
This is Super Gamecast 64. It's a comedy show. It's also a video game show where if you don't laugh, you're a sociopath. I'm your host, Matt. With me, as always,
it's Kevin.
I'm Tyler.
So this is a different... If you didn't listen to episode 118, Best of 2018 Awards Part 1, you should probably do that first. What we do on these episodes is we have a bunch of categories, and within those categories, we have nominees, and we talk about the nominees and then award a winner and a runner-up. Categories such as Best Narrative, Best Overall Game, Most Disappointing. We did that last episode.
And something to note, this is a spoiler-free podcast.
Thank you.
Also worth noting, you might hear some clinking. Tyler and I are imbibing a little holiday cheer. Leftover holiday cheer, that is.
That's some Great Lakes. Some Great Frozen Lakes Christmas
ale. So this should get a little spicy.
Yeah, we'll see how quickly the alcohol percentage hits
honey.
Them.
Spices and honey.
Cinnamon, I hear. Yeah, thanks, Tyler, because last episode I waited about 30 minutes to say that. There's no spoilers. If we're going to say anything spoilery, we'll let you know. But for the most part, we keep the first few episodes of this spoiler-free because we do have a section. I guess we're kind of calling it Super Spoiler Cast at this point. We're not sure if it's going to be a separate episode, but towards the end of these proceedings, we will have a best narrative, a best moment, potentially, in which all the spoiler talk will come out, so you don't have to worry about that stuff. For now, we have a bunch of categories, guys, and I think this is going to be a three-parter. Before we get into this, does anybody have anything quick they want to say? Like, has anyone been watching or playing anything? These episodes... are not like our normal episodes. We're going like straight through. So.
I actually do have something I want to say before we get into it. And that is that beef jerky is just a cow raisin.
Why?
You're not wrong.
Well, you said...
You're not... Okay. Well...
You didn't say it had to do with video games. I just wanted to get it out there, because if I brought that up in the middle of like...
Now I'm trying to think of
best,
like...
open world or something like that.
You know, Assassin's Creed was pretty good. Yeah, and you know what? Beef jerky is just beef raisins.
It's true.
Top tier knowledge coming from Kevin. Before we get into it, I should also note that in between the categories, you'll be hearing selections from our best music category. If you're curious as to what songs you're hearing, we should say afterwards. But if we don't, it's all in the show notes. You can find what songs, or at least from what games. And at the end, when we do our best music category, we'll let you know the various songs and stuff. So in between these categories, we will have some great music. I hope you're looking forward to it. And I hope you guys are looking forward to the rest of this episode. So let's go.
Look forward to it.
Please enjoy this video, as Nintendo would say. But it's not a video, it's an ear thing. You're listening. Guys, let's start off with... let's do Best Open World.
Yeah, boy.
We got some big hitters.
Best Open World, I'm just going to throw this out there, and it's going to be a clear winner. So I'm sorry for, alpha striking like this.
Okay, it's okay.
Earth.
Yeah, no, Earth is, well, technically Earth embodies all of these worlds. Or wait, does it? Well, technically, the reality is virtual. Okay. Are we in the simulation?
No. You cannot use my copyrighted idea.
Sorry. I'm sorry.
Of R. It's just R.
Okay.
VR exists. R is my idea.
I remember that from a previous episode. Yes. Kevin, when he announced his R reality.
It was a Super Gamecast first. I remembered something I said from a previous episode.
Top tier. So best open world. But we decide best open world, it's not the game that has an open world that's the best. It is the world itself. So we're not talking about the overall quality of the game, but rather the environments, the kind of things that happen within it, the animations, the quality of the place that you're running around in. So those nominees are Spider-Man, which it was New York. You know, y'all know New York. Friendly Neighborhood Spider-Man.
I know of it.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey, in which we got a giant journey through the Greek Isles. Red Dead Redemption 2, which is a look at America's Midwest at the turn of the century. And Yakuza 6, a fictional version of, I'll say, the red light district of Tokyo. And then a nice little village town. So those are our four nominees. I think...
A village town, huh?
Yeah, well, that's the thing. Let's start with Yakuza, then. That's the thing with Yakuza games, is generally speaking, they've always had... Not an open world, but two open-ish maps. And you'd have one that was more of like a city, which is Kamurocho. That's the one that always pops up. And Kamurocho is essentially the Tokyo downtown red light district, where you have nightclubs and various bars and karaoke places. And that's the main place in the game. And then in Yakuza 6, you go over to Anamichi, which is a quiet little village town. I think it's supposed to be like Osaka. You know what? Now that I'm talking about this, I'm thinking that I really enjoy the characters that you find. Like, a lot of Yakuza 6 is running around these streets and these alleys and finding eccentric characters and really wacky sub-stories. Like, you'll run into the little playground part, and there'll be a guy stuck in a bathroom who's like, I need toilet paper. It's real bad. It's real, real bad.
You mean like the hand in Legend of Zelda sticking out of the latrine?
Yes, but instead of like a demon hand sticking out of and scaring a little boy, it's a grown Japanese man who's pooped himself. And is not really scary.
And didn't have the disappearing poop spell.
Yeah, he didn't have the disappearing poop spell from Harry Potter.
Right.
And he is asking a Yakuza man for toilet paper. But it's kind of those like little organic silly moments that I enjoy. There are some cool... The coolest part of Yakuza 6 is you can kind of go into all of these stores and stuff. Whereas before... And maybe in some of the remasters that let you do this as well, the Kiwami remasters, but you would kind of just like roll up to a store and it would be a window where you could order something. Now when you go to a restaurant, you step in, you talk to the hostess, you see Kiryu, the main character, sitting down and eating. So it's more about like the stuff that happens within the world, the quests, and I guess that would fall under best narrative. I just want to say I really... Did you guys play Grand Theft Autos? Any of the Grand Theft Autos on PlayStation 2? You know how eventually you got to know the layout of those streets almost better than your own?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
This is kind of one of those games where I started to get that after a while. I didn't have to look at my overworld map to know, to my left is this street, to my right is this street, and I'm down the street from the stadium, or something like that.
Right.
And so I think the way that you embody, or the way that you jump into the world is cool, but maybe the world itself doesn't hold up next to these other three. Yeah, since I'm the only one who played Yakuza 6, right? No one...
Correct.
No one sniped in on this.
I didn't.
So yeah, I guess I'm okay with letting Yakuza 6 go, unless you guys think it's viable for runner-up. I don't know.
I can't really speak on the matter.
Agreed.
Okay, let's...
If you want it to stay on there, let's leave it on there for now.
Let's leave it on there, and then I'll talk again about Spider-Man. Spider-Man, I was the only one who played it, right?
Correct.
Spider-Man, I think this is kind of the thing where it's... maybe it wasn't the world itself. Because even when I compare Spider-Man... Shit, this sounds like I'm just talking shit on Spider-Man. Spider-Man's awesome. Dude, Spider-Man is really cool, and the way you move around the world is what makes the world so striking. That every single tower feels like a way to propel yourself forward in momentum. So you start to actually appreciate the layout of the buildings. You start to understand, like, oh, over by Central Park, you're going to have to get lower to the ground. So the way that the world plays into the gameplay is more than, I would say, Assassin's Creed, Red Dead, or even Yakuza does. But at the end of the day... You're very rarely on the streets.
I guarantee you this has been covered in Spider-Man. And you too may actually know this. And if you don't, I'm sure one of our lovely listeners will inform me. But, so Spider-Man swinging. You're swinging through the city, right? You're shooting your webs up into the sky.
Doing whatever
Spider-Man
can. I'm not
going to do the old trope of like, oh, what if he's not around tall buildings? You just shoot it right up into the air like in the PlayStation 1 game? Yeah, sure, whatever. I'm more concerned with the leftovers.
What do you mean?
They just dangle? Like, does the...
Yeah, the spider webs just stick on
the... Do they just stay there?
Hmm.
I'm sure they disintegrate over time, but, like, what if you get stuck on
Do you
one?
Think that would give
what
it the leg
guy...
up? Do you think that would give the leg up if the webs stuck? Do you think that
you
would
mean,
make
like,
them...
they stay there forever?
Yes.
Like, so, there's just going to be eventually, like, Spider-Man residue all
I don't,
over
I don't
New
want
York.
People... That's, that, I don't
be
think
spider
that happens.
Goo everywhere?
Spider goo?
It's not a form of transportation. It's a potential trap.
It is. What about all those? Like,
look, we're not talking about the gameplay though itself.
Let's say I'm an honest, hardworking window cleaner. in the streets of New York. My father owned a window cleaning company before me. And I inherited it from him. And I'm proud of my work. And I go up, and somebody calls me again because Spider-Man gooed all over their building. Because Doc Ock and him had a fight on the top floor. There's a lot of spider goo sitting on the windows, and I have to clean it up again. And this is the third squeegee I've lost this week because it got stuck in the goo.
I think the argument you make...
Who do you bill?
The argument... Technically, I see what you would bill Insomniac.
Oh, okay.
But are you... The argument about the webs getting stuck on the windows... At first, I was confused as to what it had to do with the world, but now I guess it's not a great world if all the workers are just constantly, you know, scrubbing off Spider-Man. This is an explicit show, by the way. This is an explicit show. Turn your ears if you're
listen.
Young.
If you think that Spider-Man goo is explicit, then you got some.
Just wait.
You got some googling to do, my friend.
Yeah, I was the only one to play this. Even when I think, as soon as I started thinking about Spider-Man and how it embodies New York, Watch Dogs 2 came up in my brain because the way they did San Francisco was so impressive. And Spider-Man doesn't even hold a candle to that. And I know that's like a weird, it's a weird thing to compare a 2018 game to a 2017 or 2016, but an older game and hold that against it. But it didn't bring New York to life in the way that other games have brought other cities to life.
I just wanted to put this out there. I really did want to play this game, but I don't
Great.
I don't have an X Station, so I couldn't play it.
Everyone should play Spider-Man. It's a fantastic game. I think what it does is it does good stuff in gameplay and the movement, but the world itself, you're moving so fast, you rarely stop. I will say that there's these collectibles, these backpacks, there's like 50 of them that you find, and they're all hidden around the world, and that makes you want to look into the nooks and crannies more. And when you do find those, it feels like there are sections that were specifically carved out so you would be running around, maybe a little puzzle to find the backpack. And at the end of the day, the backpacks, like, the collectibles are artwork and various really cool things. Like, one of them is a dumpling recipe that you can actually cook. I think I saw Binging with Babish. That's that YouTube
nice,
guy.
Yeah.
He made them. So there's cool collectibles that flesh out the world, but the world itself, I don't think matches up to either Assassin's Creed Odyssey or Red Dead. So I'm going to remove Spider-Man and Yakuza, and we're going to have a fight about whether Assassin's Creed wins or Red Dead wins. Now, Tyler, did you play either of these? Red Dead or Assassin's Creed Odyssey?
I played ACO for like 3 minutes.
Okay. Me and Kevin played this the most. All right, so then let's go to Tyler. Let's go to Tyler. Tyler, what the 3 minutes? How'd it make you feel?
It felt big. It felt daunting. It felt like there was a statue of Zeus I needed to go check out. I think that was Zeus.
So that was help. I guess 3 minutes doesn't give you a lot.
I did the first cave, like, off to the side, but I spent a lot of time on that.
Well, and I think that's the thing about Assassin's Creed Odyssey is it's huge. It's very, very, very big.
It's open.
So open, in fact, that I think it might be to its detriment. But we're going to have to talk here, Kevin, because you are a big proponent of Assassin's Creed Odyssey. You liked Origins more than I did, but I think we're both... Odyssey, I think, was my number two game of the year.
Yeah, no, I mean... okay, so this is a tough one simply
because... It scored lower than Red Dead on my personal list.
Right, so while I would argue that Red Dead is the... I don't even know if I can say that it's a superior game. However, I will
Let's just strip away the quality of the game and purely talking about
open
the
world
itself.
Open world, Assassin's Creed, for me, for sure.
Okay.
Do you want to know why, or will we go into that shortly?
I mean, yeah, this is the time to talk about it. Unless you're going to hit any spoilery stuff, which I don't think...
I'm not going to. My biggest argument for Assassin's Creed Odyssey, as compared to Red Dead, is how specifically you interact with the world. While Red Dead did have some really awesome, unique quick time events, but like... scripted events that occur when you travel through the world.
Oh, you're talking like some dude comes out of the bush. He's like, I've been bit by a snake for the fourth time.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Okay.
I found exactly that. They got a little repetitive. They were mind-blowing the first couple times.
Well, because I'll forget. No matter how many times I see somebody trying to fix the horseshoe on their horse and then get kicked in the head to death, it's still fun.
Oh, it's fantastic every time. However, it went quickly from being mind-blowing to... when am I going to see a new one of these?
Yeah.
The other thing I will, and not to shit on Red Dead, it's an amazing game. I mean, an incredible benchmark.
I think that's what I was thinking in my head is whether or not I would even count those, because I think that's almost like little side quests in the same way that Yakuza are little side quests. True. And so that's in my head. I think that is a hit against it, but I don't think.
Now, back to the core of my point. I did get on a tangent there.
Yeah. What's Assassin's Creed to you?
So to me, I see a mountain in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
And I know that for better or worse, I can climb to the top of that mountain. I see a bay, and I know I can sail across that bay. I can go anywhere in Assassin's Creed Odyssey, pending invisible walls, which I didn't really...
Yes.
It didn't interfere with my gameplay. In Red Dead, I can see a butte in the distance, and I know I will never see the top of that butte. Now, I know that's limited to the storyline, the narrative, whatever. You're not a climbing assassin man.
Yeah, true.
But that is inherently my point, is that with Assassin's Creed Odyssey, you can interact with every piece of that world. People, animals.
Well, just because you can run point blank at a rock wall and suddenly climb it, I think a lot of the world is scalable, but yes. I would argue that Red Dead has more density. You don't need to climb the mountains in Red Dead because there is enough going on within each nook and cranny of the map that at first glance, it might not look like it's very filled out, but after 100%, not 100%, but after seeing every island and every piece of land Assassin's Creed has, a lot of the stuff is empty space.
Now, not to throw a wrench in this, and I think this will require a little bit of Tyler being the voice of reason in this particular circumstance, are we going to weigh things like impressive gameplay programming into this concept? So, for example, in Red Dead, when I walk through a puddle, the bottom of my pants remains wet until it dries. Or
I think that's a detail of the world, and I think I'm going to count Red Dead's animation and how like not the dirtiness and that stuff. Yeah. I think that's more of a gameplay mechanic, but how the world impresses upon the player, I think, is a big point. But I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey has some of that stuff too.
Absolutely.
Like jumping a lake or
absolutely
whatever.
Some of the best water physics I've seen in a game.
Barna, Sea of Thieves is the only thing that looks better.
I have a couple of shots on my Instagram of screenshots I took in ACO, which, I mean, as Matt can tell you, he's been beating his head against the wall trying to get me to do shit like that forever. And it's one of the only games that impressed enough upon me to do that. And while Red Dead was also impressive, visually speaking, I guess Assassin's Creed charmed me a little more than Red Dead did.
What sounds cooler to you? Cowboys or Spartans?
It really is. It
does come down to that.
It's a it's a compact and dense cowboy world, which is up against a very vast, mythological almost version of the Peloponnesian War, and they're very different. And the thing I guess with Red Dead is that you take a lot of time getting familiar with that world because they force that pace upon you. Whereas Assassin's Creed, like Spider-Man, you fly through it because you can move so quick.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's hard to say what's so cool about Assassin's Creed Odyssey without getting into spoiler territory. And I think we'll hit a lot of those things if we do the best moment segment. But I think that Red Dead Redemption 2, while it does have some incredibly beautiful vistas and some really cool particle effects, lighting effects, and there is a variety within, like, oh, there's swamps over here, there's this bustling Saint-Denis city versus the open plains and farmlands, I think Assassin's Creed Odyssey, dollar for dollar, has far more variety. Even if you take out the whole entire ship section, you know, with all the open water, there's huge mountains, there's volcanoes, there's snowy peaks, I think, maybe. I might be misremembering this snow. That is definitely Red Dead. There's definitely some snow, a lot of snow up front in Red Dead. But you know what? I'm going to say that, yeah, at the end of the day, I finished Assassin's Creed and I kept going. I kept looking for the remaining cultists and that kind of stuff. Whereas when I finished Red Dead, and I still had some side activities I could do or side challenges, I stopped and said, I'll get back to this when Red Dead Online comes out. And then I'll be more interested in fleshing out the world. And Red Dead Online came out and I still haven't played it. I haven't played it since I finished it.
I was really hyped for it and I never got around to it.
And I think that does, while it is indicative of the gameplay and how fun it is just to sit back and play, I think it's the world too. Because at the end of the day, I finished Red Dead and I'd seen almost all the world. And Assassin's Creed, if you just play through the main quest, there's still like 20 to 30% of that world that they're like, hey, for come sure. see. And it doesn't feel like reused all the time.
Right, right.
And so for it being varied, it having a lot of stuff going on, and how much actual map there is for it to not feel super stale or super repetitive, I think that's definitely worthwhile. I think before I've even said on the show that Red Dead would be better as a linear game.
Yeah, I think so too.
So yeah, I'm feeling Assassin's Creed Odyssey winner, almost Yakuza runner-up at this point.
I feel Spider-Man runner-up.
You feel Spider-Man runner-up?
Yeah.
Kevin, if you had to
I'm not going to be any help with this runner-up business, because I would say Red Dead would be the runner-up.
Yeah, well, the thing about Red Dead is I think what works for Red Dead maybe isn't its world, but it's animation, and we should talk about that in Best Visuals. I think as I'm thinking about everything that makes Red Dead cool, beyond visual vistas and scope like that, it's like, oh, I can pick up a guy and feed him to an alligator, and it's then the alligator eats him.
Yeah, I love alligators.
I know. I said it wrong the first time, and then it was kind of like a funny thing, so yeah. I kept... But,
yeah.
Shit, yeah, you know what? Assassin's Creed Odyssey is definitely the winner in this thing.
You know...
Yes.
What, Kevin?
You know what the difference between an alligator and a crocodile is?
I did at one point, but I do not remember.
Sees you later.
Exactly.
I fucking or after you a guys. While. You guys are shit. All right.
I like to think like we're the Waldorf and Statler of this show.
Yeah.
Spider-Man. What makes you pick Spider-Man over Yakuza? Just because you like Spider-Man, Tyler?
No, it feels more open.
Because I like Spider-Man.
Yeah. Yeah. That is so, I think so.
They're both in a city.
Yes.
They're both about the same amount of blocked off. But the fact that you can be vertical.
That is
makes
thing.
It more open.
So the clear decision making...
how process. Much open is in the world?
The clear deciding factor for Tyler and I is how much up you can get.
How much? Yeah, well,
you know, the Y axis.
I mean, because realistically, like, that is part of the world, and you have to program that, and you have to account for people getting up there and not breaking the game.
I'm just like, on Spider-Man. It's very much
I'm not talking like what was that name of that horse in Skyrim? Was it like
Shadowmere,
and you could just like ride up vertical fucking cliffs.
Well, that's almost all of every Elder Scrolls.
That's what I'm saying.
I don't need to have a horse named Shadowmere to ride up a vertical surface.
Yeah, you can just do that with your own two legs, boy.
You just walk backwards.
Kevin, are you okay with giving it to Spider-Man? Because I'm actually okay giving it to Spider-Man.
Yeah, I'd give it to Spider-Man.
I was thinking, Yakuza 6, I like the style of a lot, and I think that plays into the world. I really like the...
I think you just really like being chased around in a diaper.
Okay, look, no one... Well, that's Yakuza Kiwami 2.
Oh, my bad.
And that will be talked about in a separate category. You will hear more about the diaper
best
men.
Best game, including a diaper.
And I think that's in best moment as well.
Best open world.
The winner is?
Assassin's Creed. Oh.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Yeah, they did a fucker on us. Is they put out Assassin's Creed Origins and then Assassin's Creed Odyssey. And you're like, can you not? How about you don't for a second?
You didn't for like the entire series. And then you did back to back.
Oh, shit. I shouldn't be deleting these nominees because I'm stupid.
It's cool.
Red Dead Redemption 2. I got to put that back on there because I need these nominees for another thing.
Yakuza.
Okay. Yeah.
11.
Assassin's Creed Odyssey is the winner. Runner up.
Spider-Man.
Everyone should play this. If you have, especially if you like games like Batman Arkham, you should really, really play Spider-Man.
I'm good.
Do you remember my game fact that said that Batman Arkham was almost a rhythm game?
Yes, but I don't remember the exact details. That would have been more fun for Tyler.
Yeah, it would have.
So that's the reason I like the game Rise still.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point.
It's a rhythm fighting game.
And we have talked about that. That's
rhythm,
a good one.
Rhythm in the sense that you have to have timed strikes, and it matters when you press the button. You can't just smash buttons.
I don't have a music selection from Spider-Man or Assassin's Creed Odyssey.
What about the next category?
Just hum the Spider-Man theme song to yourself.
Da-na-na-na-na. This is going to be a song from Red Dead Redemption 2.
Cruel, cruel world, must I go on? Cruel, cruel world, I'm moving on. I've been living too fast, I've been living too wrong. Cruel, cruel world, I'm gone.
What next category should we do? What do you think, guys?
So, let's scroll around here.
Was my lead-in not good enough?
What was your lead-in?
Don't we have a rhythm category?
Oh! You know what we do? Let's do rhythm. That'll be a quick one as well. Dude, sorry. There are
It's okay. It's okay. We have so many fucking categories.
Yeah, there's so many categories. It is ridiculous. So,
and I really wish I could say that was on purpose. I just remembered that game fact when we were talking about it. So,
Best rhythm. One of you read off the nominees.
Best rhythm. We've got swing.
Okay. No. If you guys, neither of you have the nominee bebop, list open. God damn it.
Reggae.
I'm just Tyler. Nope, that's not what we're doing.
Jazz. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
jazz.
Dubstep wins.
Dubstep. We got garagecore.
But that's not a rhythm. Baby. Best rhythm games. Here are our nominees for 2018. Persona Dancing All Night. In Stardom? What the fuck
is it? In Starlight or in Moonlight. It just depends.
The Persona 5.
In one of them, you start with Charmander. In the other one, you start with...
No. That's the Pokemon Dancing All Night. Citus 2 for mobile phones. And is it on PC?
I don't think so.
Mobile.
It could be, but I feel like that'd be really hard.
Beat Saber, which is that VR... You guys have seen it. It's like lightsaber rhythm game. It's on PC. It's on PSVR.
Yep.
I saw Darth Maul Man play that on the Reddit. It looked pretty cool. And Floor Kids, which is a game I don't think we talked about yet, but it's good that we're talking about it now. So, how do we want to start here?
Let's talk about Floor Kids, because I want to hear you talk some more.
Yeah. Floor Kids. Floor Kids is a cute little game. It is, I can't remember who developed it right now, but it's a small team of maybe 5 or 6 people. And it's about being a b-boy, a kid who does, you know, like coffee grinders and handstands and stuff. And the way it is... Sorry, I only played this game for like an hour, and it's kind of, it's a simple game and easy to get into, and I'm trying to remember exactly how the mechanics work, because it's very rhythm-based. Ah, okay, so you tap a button to the rhythm, I think this is on Switch, this is on PS4 and Xbox, but you tap a button to the rhythm, and you use your analog stick to modify the moves, and you have like 4 kind of different move sets. So some of them are freeze moves, you know, like do a handstand, some of it is called... top grind, I think.
Yeah, we actually talked about this one.
Did we talk about this?
We did.
Okay, and then there's floor dancing moves. But anyways, you have four different kinds of categories of moves, and you have a bunch of different dancers, and it's all this really kind of not cutesy, but animated, hand drawn animation. And the whole thing is to keep time with the button presses while you do enough variety, so your dance routine is cool. And depending on how much freshness, quote-unquote, and style you have, you get rated on how you danced, and then you can unlock other characters by earning their shards, so to speak. Each level has, like, 3 or 4 tracks, and there's a nice balance between, like, jazz, actually, EDM, rock and roll.
Grindcore.
But as a game, it really is not... There's no grindcore. At least, I don't know. I haven't played that far. Death metal, maybe.
Death metal.
But as a rhythm game, it really only has that one mode. There are the assortment of dancers, but they all kind of dance the same. They have different dance moves, which is cool, but they all play kind of the same. And it's just, you know, world 1, play the 3 tracks. Level 2, play the 3 tracks. Level 4, play the 3 tracks. And go back and get more stars if you want. I liked it, but I don't know if it'll beat a few of these others. Let's keep it on for now. Tyler, why don't you tell me about Citus 2?
Citus 2 is... let's see. I talked about Citus at length at one point.
Yeah.
And that game is just, it's a phone game where you're pressing bubbles that pop up on your phone. You got a bar that goes from the top of your screen to the bottom and back and forth. It just bounces.
Follow the bouncing ball.
Basically, yeah. Yeah. Except there's, all sorts of different ways you got to move your thumb. You got to tap the buttons. You got to swipe the swipes. You got to press and hold the presses and holds.
What kind of music does it have?
A lot of different kinds,
God damn it, Kevin! No
metal.
Watch, one of these games probably does have a grindcore
Korean
track in
metal.
It.
It's
baby metal.
I think baby metal's on there.
That's what I'm saying. Boy.
But Citus is. It reminds me a lot of just
Owl City
EDM stuff.
Is it? Is it unique enough? How long did it keep your attention? Over Citus 1, because you played Citus 1 quite a bit.
I did. I played it, and I think I spent money on that, because it was free at the time.
Yes.
I liked Citus because, I mean, everything was free, and that's my problem here. Citus 2 was not free. Citus 2 was $3, and then each artist after that was $10.
That's a lot. How many did you get for $10?
For $10, you got one.
One song or one artist?
One artist.
And how many songs per artist?
Like maybe 12 tops.
That's a lot. That's close to iTunes level, guys.
Right.
You like buy a whole song, but then you can't even use a song outside of Cytus.
I mean, you have to use beginner, or you have to do beginner, expert, and chaos.
So if you wanted Venga Boys, you had to pay $10.
I think so, yeah. I mean, I didn't think it was on there.
Venga Boys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think it's on
there. You're talking about Venga Bus? I haven't played. No.
The Venga Boys.
I'm not familiar.
It's my band.
No. Oh. No. Okay.
We do covers of Venga Bus in different styles.
Is Cytus Tuesday?
Grindcore.
No.
Stop it with the grindcore.
It does. It's executed well. But I think there are better games on this list than Cytus 2.
Well, if we drop Cytus 2, then we're down to the final three. Yeah. Did you play Beat Saber? I didn't.
I did not either, but I watched people play Beat Saber.
When I see Beat Saber videos, I just like, I look at them and be like, I wish I would look that cool when I played it, but I know I will just look like that fucking Star Wars kid.
Yes.
100%.
That is Beat Saber.
Does anybody else have the issue with Cytus where all you can think of is like a fat redneck in overalls?
I don't. What are you talking about?
Like, I hear the word Cytus and I just think of like a redneck guy.
No, I think of like if you say Curtis.
Like Cletus.
Cletus. Cletus, yeah. Not Cytus. Cletus would work. Good. A swing and a miss from Kevin, but.
It wasn't a joke.
Beat Saber, okay. Well, Beat Saber, none of us play, but I think it does deserve a nod in Best Rhythm because it has definitely taken over the internet in an exciting way. Before this thing was even released, everyone was like, oh shit, it's lightsaber rhythm games. So I think it gets a nod, but I don't know if I feel comfortable putting a word on it without playing it.
I certainly do.
Okay.
I just want to throw this out there. Venga Boys is a real band.
I'm sure it is. God damn it, Kevin.
You know the song Boom 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 Boom?
Yes.
That's by POD.
That's Venga Boys.
Oh, sorry, that was Boom Boom Pow.
We Like to Party.
All right, so like Persona Dancing. Tell me about Persona Dancing.
Wait, didn't they do the Venga Bus song?
No, that's something
These
different.
Are supposed to be quick categories, you shitheads.
I'm just trying to inject some comedy in here.
Oh, okay? Man. We got a
video
bash
game
through
show,
this.
If you don't laugh, you're an asshole.
Well, look, you're a sociopath.
Whatever, same thing.
Tell me about Persona Dancing in the Night Star.
Okay, so it's basically the same game, just with different music.
But it's brand new characters, though, right?
But yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's your favorite P3 characters or your favorite P5 characters, depending on which game you got. Because there were two released. There was one for P3 and one for P5. The music is fantastic. It's remixes of all the music from the OST, and I don't think the OST is on it at all.
If you've played Persona 5, you know how fucking stylish that game sounds.
Good God, that's a good game.
What's the gameplay actually like? Because I don't think I've played a Persona Dancing game. DDR, or how does it work?
It feels more like DDR. But since it's on a controller.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got like down, left, X, O, and L and R.
Okay.
And you have to press those buttons. And at the same time, you have to like flick a stick to...
So it's like a highway, though, like a Guitar Hero or like a DDR like
kinda.
That?
Kinda. So you got a circle, and the notes are coming at you in different directions.
From outside the circle?
It's very obvious where they're going and what you have to press.
Ah.
But there are different modes. Different difficulties, different modes, like reverse. It could be randomized every time.
Is this Persona Dancing Beat Saber? Is that what you're trying to pull over on me here?
Sorta. I mean, it's Persona.
Because Cytus, it sounds like you're mad about Venga Boys costing $10 in Cytus. And I haven't played Cytus, but I remember Cytus 1 being fun. Is if the gameplay holds up, but it has shitty microtransactions, I guess
those ain't micro.
Yeah, no, those are macro.
Those are macro transactions.
I don't know how hard you would hold it against it. But
I hold it pretty hard against it.
Floor Kids I liked, but I think objectively Beat Saber is a better rhythm game. I just haven't played it.
So I haven't either, but the way it looks is just so good.
Beat Saber does look fucking cool. All right, are we doing Persona? Is Persona the winner here? Is the OST that good?
The OST is that good, but I wouldn't say, like, as a rhythm game, it doesn't...
I'm, I'm going to say Beat Saber, though.
You're going to say Beat Saber?
Yeah.
I think Beat Saber's a winner.
Yeah. Okay.
I think Floor Kids holds up better than Persona does.
Okay.
But not because of the music, because of the...
Gameplay?
The gameplay.
Well, yeah, I mean, when it comes down to rhythm games, it is make or break on how you put those button presses in. And Floor Kids has a very cool flow and rhythm to it.
Right, that's the thing.
Whereas, I think...
I think we can all agree, though, that it is long since we've had a Parappa the Rapper. And
yes.
It's long overdue.
No, they tried to do something that was like Parappa, and it didn't work out too well. I think it sold like 8,000 copies.
Like, just do the same goddamn thing. It was good.
Well,
they did that. They did Parappa, and then they did...
It was a winning formula.
No, that's a problem. Jammer Lammy. They did it on the Wii, yeah. And it sold like 8,000 copies, and that's why
it's
dead now.
Well, it's because they didn't call it Parappa the Rapper.
Well...
It was the same people. It was the same fuzzy-looking...
Okay.
Cat thing, not a dog thing.
Best rhythm is Beat Saber Floor Kids?
Yes.
Yep. I don't endorse this Beat Saber thing.
Well, haven't played it?
Yeah, I feel weird giving an SGC award to a game I haven't played. Okay. None of us have played.
Tell me why.
Do you need to play it to understand... I mean, because it's really pretty simple.
Well, and that's like the thing, I guess.
DDR,
it is,
where you have to memorize the game.
It is simple,
cool.
But there is like things that are wrong with PSVR tracking that can pop up, and I don't know if it's that good or if it's really just good on Oculus. I mean, it's fine. It's at the end of the day, it's a good game. Like, I can see objectively, but not putting my hands on it.
Let's put it this way: if you put all four of those games in front of me right now, Beat Saber is the one I'd want to play.
Yes, I can agree there. Yeah. I might say Persona, but Beat Saber. But is Beat Saber a cool game outside of VR? Because we've held that against other VR games before. You know?
I would probably try it outside of VR.
Would you do that with Wiimotes?
Yes, absolutely.
If it could read that accurately, the sure, why not?
Okay, well, Beat Saber, and then Floor Kids, yeah? Yeah?
Yeah.
We're all in agreement here? Okay. Beat Saber is our winner. Floor Kids. Funny enough, we do not have any music selections from Beat Saber or Floor Kids, and I think a lot of those would be just straight up copyrighted songs. Well, there might be some original stuff in there, especially for Beat Saber. So let's do a song from... You know what? I'm gonna do a song from Nidhogg 2 here. I don't even think Nidhogg 2 is this year. I don't. You know,
some sweet ass like vaporwave.
Why don't you do something from the next category, Matt?
What you just heard was a nice thanks, Tyler. Thank you. That was a Dead Cells song. And Dead Cells is one of our nominees for our best action category, which is up now. Guys, action's a weird category. It's kind of hard to decide what's action RPG, what's action adventure. Genres are so foggy these days, but these are the games that we had fun doing stuff, pressing buttons fast, doing some action, you know? Taking a action of some sort. These are the games we felt embodied best action. So the nominees are Hitman 2, Dead Cells, as you heard the song from, Mega Man 11, good old jump and shoot man, Monster Hunter World, which I feel is like a weird one in this category. It's way more of an RPG, but we'll talk about it. And then Bloodstained Curse of the Moon, which is a fantastic video game.
And we'll talk about more later.
I'm the only person who played Hitman 2, right?
Yep. Tell me about a stealth game and how it's action.
Okay, that's the thing, is that before in the old school Hitmans, I would say those are definitely stealth games. The kind of stealth game where if you fuck something up, you're done. You know, you're like a Metal Gear Solid 2 situation. You're screwed. Hitman 2 and Hitman 1 are very much the same game. They play the same. But what Hitman 2 does is it really brings out the idea of like, hey, there are ways to kill these guys, or you have your assassination target, and we will show you the path to get there. So it becomes more of like, there are stealth mechanics, but the game is forgiving enough that if you need to get a room emptied and there's two people, you can just pull out any weapon you have and, you know, kill them instantaneously. Oftentimes, I actually found it's really easy to complete a mission just by starting yourself off with an assault rifle and killing everybody. Because the only way you fail a mission is if you get killed. So you can play Hitman 2 like an action game. I agree that it's stealth, but I think it is stealth action, mainly because once you fuck up, what are you giggling at?
Just, you know, like, the way people play this, the way they show it is, Yeah, they take this one guy, they take his clothes, they hide his body somewhere, and they walk around. They're that guy.
Yeah, they shove him in a dumbwaiter and right. move on.
Well,
there's you with an assault rifle. You just murder everyone.
I just found out
you
if can. I fucking kill everybody. You can still the hitman.
Well, I mean, and I think that therein lies
He's
the
been
thing.
Been hit.
There is definitely a stealth element to it. The game is very fully stealth, but it does reward. There's multiple challenges for killing people with three explosives or this or that. The game encourages you to go outside the normal vision of a hitman who just is in and out.
Killing someone with three explosives, I mean, three explosives for one person?
Sometimes. That's what
you
I'm
just
saying.
Just attach them all to one guy.
Proximity mines all up his butt.
It is very much a stealth game, but there is plenty of action to be had. Especially, like I said, in the side missions and stuff. There's like a cool Easter egg. I guess slight spoiler, slight Easter egg for Hitman 1, I think it is. But if you shoot out the bells on this ship, a giant kraken comes up and takes the ship down. And so it's like, it's,
cool.
Yeah.
Nice.
See, and you start to see. You're right. It is a stealth game. But it's self-aware, and a lot of it is ridiculous, more so than I would say the standard action game can get.
Who do you think out of the three of us would be the best hitman?
Tyler.
Is it because I'm bald?
Yes.
No, it's because
you look good in a suit. Yeah, right? Hitman 2 also did some pretty cool things with the story. It actually went from being shitty, and it's like, it's a hitman guy who kills.
Look out. He's gonna hit.
Yeah, don't do the hit. To an actually fleshed out character, which is pretty cool to see. I want to leave it for now, just because there is no stealth category. I think this is the best place it fits.
You think he ever had hair?
Yes.
No.
Did you watch the movie?
No.
Okay, look, the movie's not goddamn canon. I don't want to hear it. That shit is not canon. What I will want to say is that Hitman 2 is really cool in the idea that if you bought Hitman 1, you can get what is called the Legacy Pack for free. And it's every single Hitman 1 level brought into the Hitman 2 engine. And since Hitman 2 has an overall progression that goes across all the levels, it is really... I think it's just really, really cool. It's basically the whole entire Hitman 1 game and all of its locations within Hitman 2 for free if you bought original Hitman 1.
That's awesome. Right. Except if you've already played it.
Well, and that's the thing. You've already played it, but there's some changes between Hitman 1 and Hitman 2 within the engine. Now you can hide in grass. Like if there's overgrown grass, you can kind of sneak in there. So they did redo some of the areas of the old maps to fit with the new
grass.
Quality
of life. The grass grew between the show and the games.
pretty much.
Landscaped.
Yeah, I want to leave it on here, but only because I don't want to see it go quite yet. Tyler.
Yes.
We talked about Dead Cells a lot last year.
Yes.
In Best of 2017.
I mean, I feel like we talked about all of these. We really don't even need to go into detail on a lot of them.
We don't. I think we're good.
Dead Cells, well, I think the one we're going to talk about is Monster Hunter.
Yes, we didn't really...
And we haven't talked about Bloodstained yet.
I mean, objectively, Monster Hunter is just monster hunting.
Right, with big weapons.
Well, it's very much as an action game. Okay, so Dead Cells.
Yeah.
Do we not want to talk about these games because we talked about them before? Are we saying we should just go through this?
In the interest of time, maybe we should just give a brief overview to remind the listener of what it is.
Yeah, I feel like...
Give a summary.
I think these some of these nominees are in other categories, and we talk about them ad nauseum then, and what we really love about them if it comes up. But I think Dead Cells we've talked about to death. And if you haven't listened to our old episodes, that's your fault.
Yeah.
That's really... It's not your fault.
It is.
But
he's
so
nice.
In short, Dead Cells is a Metroidvania roguelite arcadey action game where you play as a dead guy with no head, with several different weapons, and you try to make it to the end.
You try not die again.
And when you don't, that's where the arcadey comes in. You start over and
you have
die
cells.
And die again.
You have dead cells
also
that
where
you
the
earn.
Comes in.
Right. We're not gonna get into the minutiae of the game, just
Mega Man 11 is another Mega Man game, but it's colorful,
and
I think
gears.
I think
much
it's
much harder.
Yes, I think it is a fantastic game.
I don't believe it's a Mega Man game.
It is a Mega Man game. It has the gear system. I think was used before, actually.
No, it wasn't.
Sure, somebody corrected me. I thought it was you who corrected me and said that the gear system was used in like some Game Boy one, but I don't know because
never say that.
Okay,
it's a lie.
I liked the gear system because it allowed you to slow down time and make jumps easier. I didn't really use the whole gear system thing. Was you hold like left trigger, slow down time, or hold right trigger, and you make your attacks more powerful. You could hold down both to be like Super Mega Man. I very rarely used the.
Isn't that redundant?
Yeah, pretty much. Oh, okay. I don't think it was actually called Super Mega. Mega. But it was like double gear mode or something.
I honestly,
I used it to slow down time. Occasionally used the damage buff for like a boss or a difficult enemy. But I just thought it was a really, really solid Mega Man game with a cool time slowdown mechanic. Then again, I played on easy mode. Like, Tyler, you played on normal mode, which I think is a very challenging game. I don't know how that comes up in the end of it with having only seen, you know, like one or two of the bosses. I think the bosses are cool, but maybe not the most effective of the series. I love jumping and shooting. I love the Mega Man.
I'm as big a fan as you. I don't have him tattooed on my body, but I could.
I would put Bloodstained over Mega Man though this year.
I'm just saying Mega Man 11 was not the best Mega Man could be.
I guess. I think
it was
I think
kind of like Man 11.
It was an okay Man 11.
It's all a matter of opinion.
Good Man.
Bloodstained Curse of the Moon. Let's discuss this briefly. Or do you want to? There's a category later on that is much. Probably next episode that is better suited to dive deep into this game.
For sure.
But I want to say that Bloodstained Curse of the Moon is fantastic.
Yeah,
it's like
you either play as a girl, a guy, or an old man.
Or, depending on the mode you're playing, you play as just one of them with all the powers of four. There's a lot of replayability that goes on in Bloodstained Curse of the Moon.
There's about three modes you could play.
I think there's like... Yeah. Like three additional after you do the normal mode, right? There's Ultra.
Yeah. Nightmare. And Regular.
Yes. I don't know. I haven't done all the modes.
Regular hard mode.
Okay, that's what I was thinking. Bloodstained Curse of the Moon is a game that is basically old school Castlevania, but more like Castlevania 3? Am I thinking right? You have multiple characters. You start off as one guy and you work your way through literally just 8-bit levels. I mean, it's like 8-bit Castlevania.
Yep.
But coming from somebody who didn't like 8-bit Castlevania games, I thought it was fantastic. The reason I liked it, actually, was as you move through, you can you'll find these people and these party members, and you can either kill them and absorb their powers, or you can bring them into the group, and then you can switch between them, which basically gives you four health bars, okay? Yep. And
useful.
Yes, but the coolest thing is that even though you have all four of these characters at the same time, and some of them could die, the game does not restrict your progress if one of the characters is dead. It's like each level has branching paths. Like one of the characters can fly. So there's like a fly over this chasm. Right. But if that guy is dead, you're not screwed because you can't fly over the chasm. There's another area that you can go to where the character you do have alive will allow you to progress.
Because you can beat the game with one character.
Yes. But there's like tons and tons of shortcuts. And that offers a lot of replayability plus the modes.
Right. Or you can play it on hard mode.
And that's just a hard game. I think it's a beautiful game too, and we'll get into that in the other category. Okay, you guys want to say your piece on Monster Hunter World? Because I played Monster Hunter World, I thought it was really good, really, really good. I was coming from a newcomer perspective, and I thought there was a few issues, mainly with like the way you got online with people, but moment to moment, tracking the monsters, killing them, following the scout flies, it was all very, very fun, especially online with friends. And I did play a lot of that game solo as well. But coming from like you guys playing hundreds of hours of old school,
right.
Do you think it lived up to your expectations? We talked about this at length once again, but
yes,
for consideration.
As a Monster Hunter game, it tracked perfectly. There was a lot of quality of life updates that I enjoyed. I know a lot of my more hardcore friends did not. I'm not a fan of suffering through a game simply because of tradition. So this did a lot for me in terms of, I mean, I still played through the challenging version of Monster Hunter, and I still found this to be more favorable because it introduced a game that I love, that I've spent hundreds and hundreds of hours playing with people I also love.
Not to cut you off, but sure. I really want the audience to know, between Tyler and Kevin, these guys, if you haven't listened to us talk about Monster Hunter before, they were so into the 3DS games that Kevin broke one of his 3DSs,
I think,
from pressing one of the buttons too much.
Yes.
Tyler, they would sit there and do like 18-hour marathon sprees and with a whole group of people. This was like an event for them.
For some context, Tyler and I lived together for about 5 years.
Yes.
And before I moved in with Tyler, one of the first things I did when I hung out with him was watch them play Monster Hunter 3, and I immediately went out and bought it so that I could play with them the next time I showed up. So they taught me how to play it from that point on, and every single one that came out from that point on which was briefly or immediately followed by 3 Ultimate.
Yep.
So I bought 3 and then 3 Ultimate came out anyway. But every game after that, we all played together. We all logged time on. We would take the day off when it launched and play literally from the moment we all woke up at like 7 until... usually it was a weekend, so we would play through the whole fucking weekend.
Right. So this is a franchise that you guys have both spent years upon years of nostalgia's building up, and this is the first console version. Well, not console, but first, you know, modern console, Xbox One, PlayStation 4, PC eventually had a release.
And by that measure, I am likely a heretic for enjoying Worlds as much as I do.
I've heard, you know, I get what you're saying, that I've heard a lot of people naysaying from old school to new school, but...
And I don't disrespect people for disliking it because it's unlike the other games, or it's unlike it in the traditional ways. I just, like I said, I feel like unnecessary suffering is not a good reason to not improve upon an existing IP.
As a newcomer, I will say I thought that some of the upgrading and stuff, just generally speaking, was a little bit obtuse for no reason.
It's always been
obtuse. I understand that it's always been obtuse, but I don't think that something always being bad and then being slightly less bad should make it good. You know what I'm saying?
True, true.
I don't think that that's like a knock to not have it win this category even. But I just wanted to bring that up. Tyler, you have stuff to say about Monster Hunter, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
So please, take the floor.
8,766 hours.
8,766?
Favorite song from the musical Rent.
That's how
now
many,
on Fox.
That's how many hours are in a year. I've put more hours in Monster Hunter than that. I know the ins and outs of every little bit of Monster Hunter, and then they came out with this. This, you don't need to know anything. This is the most accessible Monster Hunter of all time. And I hate it for that reason.
Why?
Why?
Tyler's the king of obtuse.
I am. I am the king of obtuse. I'm not saying this game's bad. I'm saying that when I finally got to the end game, it didn't feel like the end game in anything else. I didn't feel like I had to try. I just always won.
So the lack of challenge is what...
Yeah.
Now, may I level a criticism.
Absolutely.
Simply because it's such a customizable game. It's such a game that relies on your choice in your objective choice in the weapon you use, that saying that endgame was too easy, was it because you played weapons that you were familiar with?
I play all weapons.
I played longsword, and I just played longsword. Right? Was that what it was? Mm-hmm. Or greatsword or something like that?
But arguably and ostensibly, you are better at certain weapons than others. You're not like me, who primarily used insect glaive or bow.
True.
You have a couple that you are good at, and then you have a few that you're just decent at. So,
I don't think Tyler being able to beat something because he's good at the game makes it not challenging. I'm saying that I don't think Tyler not having a challenge with the game,
right?
It doesn't matter that he's good at it. You know, it's like if he wanted to check. Does it have multiple difficulty levels?
No.
No.
It only goes from like the beginning, and then it goes to like the whatever pro.
There's like the tempered monsters and stuff too.
Yeah.
Right. I didn't get back into that because it just seemed like a
slog.
Yeah.
Like power creep.
So how are you sitting on Monster? Are you saying that you don't want Monster Hunter World to win?
No, I'm not saying that.
Okay. You would like it to be at the top.
I am fine important with circle back on that.
Okay.
That it is one of the best action games this year.
Yes.
All right. I think I put, and this is me, I've tried Monster Hunter games before. I've tried to have you guys explain, like, it just did not register for me, but I was able to pick this up. We played it online. It was tons of fun to play with friends, and then I had a good time. Unlike Tyler, I'm not so good. So I had a few problems with the tornado fucking beasts and
Ushula Deora.
Yeah, some of those end game beasts were pretty brutal. But few games really say, hey, here's a bunch of giant monsters, go hunt them. And to the fact of, here's 13, 14, upwards of a dozen plus completely unique weapons. Completely different. Playing with the insect glaive is completely different from playing with a projectile weapon or a big like axe or hammer. So the amount of variety they give you within how you play or how you do the action, one could say, I think is definitely something that needs to be acknowledged. I think we have a clear winner here. I don't think we have a clear runner-up.
Dead Cells.
I would say Bloodstained Curse of the Moon over it because Dead Cells was last year.
I think Dead Cells is a better action.
But did we say Dead Cells wasn't allowed to be on last year because it was early access?
Yes, I believe we did.
Then I retract that earlier statement.
That being said, I'm agreeing with you, not because, I mean, if we did it based completely on what games I logged the most time on, Dead Cells would win. But in terms of game structure, I think Bloodstained's a little bit more complex, and by that measure, something I enjoyed more.
I can agree with you on Bloodstained. I think Dead Cells... I like Dead Cells. Ooh, that's rough.
I like Dead Cells a lot. I want that to be clear.
Because they're two different games. Like, all
right. Of these five games...
I'm willing to let Hitman 2 go and Mega Man 11 go.
The game that gets my blood pumping the most is Monster Hunter.
Yes.
Followed by Dead Cells.
Yes.
And it's very close.
Dead Cells, I will say this. Dead Cells gave me one of the most invigorating and satisfying moments of the year when I beat the last boss for the first time. Because you go up against him. You get through the Dead Cells game pretty quickly. Or not pretty quickly. I mean, it took me 64 tries. But the idea is, once you finally get to him, you're like, oh, I've reached him. Here we go. And this dude just fucking slaughters you.
Oh, yeah.
He just throw it, and you go, oh, shit. There is, and I got to the last boss 5, 6, 7 times, completely got screwed over every time. And then one time, I was like, I'm going to try to use some grenades, a different weapon, and it was so close. But I finally beat him, and it's the first time, I think, in maybe, probably all year, that I was like, yes! You know, yelling, like, yes, finally, I did it!
Yep.
I wrote a whole article about, you know, it took me 64 tries to beat, here's what I thought. The only thing I would say that's weird about Dead Cells is that it is a live game. So like the way I played with the traps and stuff is no longer viable. They have, patched the game to remove some of those kits. Yeah.
Like what?
Like the whole idea of throwing down a trap to trap, beasts and stuff. They've removed the tactics tree, I believe.
Completely?
I don't know. I can't say 100% cause I have not gone back and played, but last I heard they were removing the tactics tree and changing how the updates worked. I would just say that we're talking about Dead Cells. Launch window Dead Cells. August 2018 Dead Cells. Because anything they're doing in this new year, I don't know. Honestly, I'm okay with giving it to either. I feel like there's a lot of love for Dead Cells across the room. I think there's a lot of love for Bloodstained across the room.
I would be happy with either of them winning.
I think, Tyler, you care to see Dead Cells above Bloodstained more than anything else?
I do.
So,
and in the effort of supporting you, I will concede Bloodstained too.
And then I'm gonna look around the room, and when Bloodstained comes up later on, maybe we, as I obnoxiously wink, maybe we give it there. I'm just saying, Bloodstained. There's other categories for Bloodstained.
They can probably hear that wink.
Wink. Okay. Best action game of 2018 is Monster Hunter World, followed by Dead Cells, which got its early access or PC release, I think, late 2017, and then got Xbox and PlayStation releases in 2018. So,
sorry, but all I can think of when he said you could hear that wink is like in SpongeBob when he would blink and it would be like...
the only thing...
Make a quack sound.
Yeah.
The only thing I want to say is I want to bring this up. Kevin said, remember, Best of 2017 Awards... Or at the end of Best of 2017 Awards, we were talking about the games we were looking forward to in the year 2018. I think I brought this up before. And one of the ones was Monster Hunter World. And Kevin said, and I quote, you know, it's going to be interesting when we do Best of 2018 to see if we go, oh yeah, Monster Hunter World, no deal. It's definitely game of the year. Or if we're like, Monster Hunter, what? And I think that despite everything, coming out January 31st, was it? 30th or whatever?
Yeah.
We are still as hot on it.
Yeah,
now.
For sure.
I mean, we might not play it as often, but that game definitely, for a 13-month-old game, it left an impression.
Yeah.
Easily taking a lot of these other games, Hitman 2, Dead Cells, Bloodstained, I have played, and I have the recency bias. I just played them, and so that's new and fresh in my head, but Monster Hunter stands up. So Monster Hunter is the winner. Runner-up is Dead Cells. With that, we are going to take a quick break, but you guys are going to hear some awesome music from a nominee from the next category coming up. We're going to do Best Shooter. And
cool.
So here is a little piece from Far Cry 5.
Only you can make all this world seem right. Only you can make the dark.
It was like old timey. I really like that. It's a music, a little music that plays at the end if you get a certain ending, and also one of the brothers. We'll talk about it. This is Best Shooter, but I like that song a lot. Best Shooter of 2018. Our nominees are Immortal Redneck, which what I'm going to do is I'm just going to say off the top, Immortal Redneck is a really cool roguelite. It's a first-person shooter. It's like got this weird...
It's a fun little game.
Yeah. It's all like Egyptian pyramids you're going into, and you can play as different gods, and they all have different sets of weapons and stuff.
Sounds like something I would have liked.
It's a very fast-paced, like almost a Quake speed, original Quake speed.
That's fast.
But this is a game that came out early 2018. It was on PC and most other consoles in 2017, and I don't think it stands up against the rest of this list of nominees, so I'm going to wipe it now. But I just want to say, if you're looking for a fun, replayable, I think I got like 60 hours out of it, just first-person shooter, it feels very classic and old-school.
Yeah, I was just going to say, the gameplay is tight, but it feels very like classic and fun.
It feels like a classic Quake game, but yes. What I like a lot about it is that the visuals and the enemies you're fighting are very cartoony. They all have a lot of really... There's a lot of really cool weapons and abilities, like one person has a grappling hook. There's a really cool sense of speed to it, and I think it's like $20. So go out and pick it up if you're looking for a fun shooter that doesn't have too much story or anything to it. But I'm going to knock it off the list, and these are the rest of the nominees. Far Cry 5, Destiny 2's Forsaken expansion, which we're considering as a whole game because it pretty much rewrote how the game functions. Deep Rock Galactic, which is an early access four-person co-op kind of shooting adventure game.
Yes. Yep.
And Call of Duty Black Ops 4, that doesn't really need much of an explanation, and Fortnite. So, how you guys feel about talking about Fortnite real quick?
I think...
Tyler's like, shrug.
I think that it, as games journalists, it would be irresponsible for us to ignore the impact that Fortnite has had on gaming.
We have another category we'll do this episode that I think applies better for Fortnite, and Fortnite might be a contender there. But I don't think I align. I did play quite a bit of Fortnite. You know, I bought one of the season passes. I played season 4. We played it early when it first came out, and I've played it since. I haven't played after like all the planes and shit. Those updates that were towards the end of 2018, but I will say for a free-to-play game that has as much of cross-platform accessibility as it does,
yep.
It is a very fun game to pick up and play. It's when you get into the building where it becomes less of a shooting game and more like a Minecraft, almost strategy.
That is my biggest complaint with Fortnite, and it's simply because the learning curve is far too much for me. The learning curve versus how much of a shit I give is... That bell curve is unfortunately sparse. That being said, I love seeing all the videos and screenshots of the cool shit that they do, like week after week. Like the programming that goes into that game is genuinely impressive.
It is a very well kept game. There's a lot of shit going on. They always update it. They always patch it. They're always listening to their fans. But from a pure gameplay perspective, it is just a over the shoulder shooter with some quirky weapons and a fun game mode. I mean, it is, if you look at Fortnite, half of it isn't that great right now. If we're looking at it as a whole, like the campaign mode of it, and I think since we're not talking, this isn't best multiplayer,
right.
This isn't best online, this is best shooter.
I gotta be honest, I really loved Save the World.
I liked it at the top, but they've consistently not been up to
it. Yeah.
Which is, hopefully 2019 we'll see some differences. That I think this is the year it's supposed to specifically go free to play. And we'll see, maybe they'll update it more than they already have. But I think, like Kevin said, it would be irresponsible of us to just not include it on the list because we purely didn't like it that much. Tyler, did you play any or, like, any Fortnite?
I watched someone play it and I just didn't understand what was going on.
It doesn't strike me as a game. Most Battle Royale games don't strike me as a game that you would enjoy. But no. Even to that point, there is a better Battle Royale, I think, on this list than Fortnite. So Fortnite... Thank you for everything you've done to the game industry, and thanks Epic to everything you've done as far as giving more money towards developers, because they've seen how much money they're making off of Fortnite. They're kind of spreading the love through dollars, and that's awesome.
And ecology.
Yes, but Fortnite's going to be dropped off the list.
Yep.
And let's, while we're in the ballpark of Battle Royales, let's talk about Call of Duty Black Ops 4. Am I the only one who played this?
Correct.
Black Ops 4, I know, Kevin, you were super interested in Blackout, which is their Battle Royale.
I'm interested in Black Ops in general. Call of Duty is a very big guilty pleasure for me.
It's a grand game.
But I cannot justify spending full price on it, because while I would play the shit out of it, I don't need to. You know, I got enough games that I sink my time into.
That I think the full price argument you bring up is something interesting because they just recently released Call of Duty. I forget what it's called, but on the PC, it is a bundle pack that is only $40. And it is just, it's everything in Call of Duty minus zombies. So that is like, for the people who maybe don't want to play zombies, it's something to bring up. So Call of Duty Black Ops 4 is really, they removed the single player story content. That is no longer a mode in the game. And that's a knock against it, in my opinion. Because that's one of the things I loved about Call of Duty in general. But the three main modes you have are online multiplayer, Blackout, which is their 100-person battle royale mode, very similar to a Fortnite, and then you have the Zombies mode, which is far more fleshed out. And I think Zombies is actually what stands up the hardest. It's what is changed the most and for the better. Beyond having really cool arenas to play in, like you have this Colosseum arena with different gods and goddesses that represent the different powers you can get, you also have the Titanic, and you're trying to find these different things and these secret Easter eggs in the Titanic, and it's a very cool map with all the tight hallways and stuff like that. But beyond just the setup, you have insane amounts of customization. Like, you can decide how densely the zombies pack together, how many zombies there are per spawn, what weapons are spawned in at the top, what weapons are in the mystery box. Like, literally, every facet of the AI and customization of that mode, you can change now in custom games. And that was really, really impressive to see. The multiplayer is kind of the same stuff that you'd assume. But instead of running off walls and doing all sort of crazy jetpack stuff, they've lowered it to the more Black Ops 2 sprint, slide kind of stuff. It's hero-based, but not like Overwatch. You sure. have archetypes. You know, this guy has a defensive wall right. that he can put up. This person can see people through walls.
Black Ops 3 was hero-based.
It was, but not as... So they've kind of refined the heroes that appeared in 3. Gave them a little fleshed out story and some tutorials on how to play each of them. That's what they substituted. Instead of the story mode, you have kind of this training ground where they introduce you to each character, their backstory, and then you get to play a bot match that is... Like, if someone's more objective-based, you play a capture the flag. Whereas in Black Ops 3, it was like, you can still customize your loadouts and all this stuff, but your character you choose might give you one or two abilities. I think Black Ops 4 is much more about the character you play as and the composition of your team.
So it's kind of like in the old Call of Duty games where you would start the game and you wouldn't have access to the custom layouts and you would have to play like the pre-built layouts.
Yeah, and there's like more progression there. I mean, you can choose. There is loadouts. They do the pick 10 system and stuff. But I think how you play is very more... It's more dependent on who you pick than the kind of player you are, you know? Like, you can definitely... run with a sniper on every character, but some characters are specifically designed for sniper play. And I guess that's what I mean. And then the Blackout mode, I liked a lot, more so than Fortnite, because like Kevin pointed out, the building isn't what I like in shooters. And that's not what I like in Battle Royales either. I liked PUBG specifically because it's just gun v gun, and you have some vehicles. Blackout is basically PUBG, but better. I would say Fortnite is its own beast. But what I liked about Call of Duty is that all of the little locations that are on the map are maybe not one-to-one, but they are paying homage to popular Call of Duty maps. So where in Fortnite you have, like, Tilted Towers or, you know, whatever lake or whatever, this place you can drop into the firing range. You can drop into Nuketown Island. You know, so these places or these environments that you're used to seeing in Call of Duty multiplayer are now revitalized as different drop-in locations. Cool. It's very, very cool. And the way that they introduce the idea of using perks mm-hmm. and build that to a controller for quick use, I think is better than Fortnite.
Okay.
With Fortnite, you know how you have to like hold a button and then adjust what you have in your inventory.
That's part of what I can't wrap my head around. I'm sure with enough time I could do it.
In Call of Duty Blackout, it's like you'll come across like a UAV or something, right? You can pick it up, and then to use it, you just press left on the D-pad, and that's how you scroll through all your usables. Right on your D-pad scrolls through all of like your healths, I think. But it's all very, very macro-based, and I think that is really, really cool, and what I look for in a tense... it's Call of Duty 100 people against each other. It's really, really cool. Huh. I think that's what makes it fun, is that it's not as serious as PUBG, it's not as cartoony as Fortnite, but it strikes the fast pace that you expect from Call of Duty with some interesting things. Like nice. Zombies permeate the map in certain sections, and if you kill enough zombies, you get like a roll, I think, on the mystery box from zombies. So there's a bunch of cool little Call of Duty-isms in this really fleshed out mode. So I think it stays on the list for now, in my opinion. Deep Rock Galactic.
It's a fun game about dwarves.
Yes. I didn't play it. So, yeah, what is it all about?
Space dwarves.
Space dwarves. You go mine different, well, maybe just one planet.
Did you guys play this on PC or Xbox?
PC.
Okay.
This game has four classes of dwarves that are very,
Rolly.
Yeah, very roll-oriented.
Yes.
This is, you got a scout who can grapple shot all over the map. You got a digger who can,
dig things?
He's got a pair of drill claw things, and you just bust through walls like you don't even care. You got the engineer who sets up platforms, and you got the gunner.
Now that makes sense.
Who has these cool grapple line things. It's a pretty cool game. It's really well built.
Yeah, it's like very inventive.
Yeah.
What's the whole draw of it? Like, if it's like, when I first saw it, it kind of looks like a, not spooky, but you're in these caves, four player, cooperative, but also competitive against monsters left for dead. But it also maybe reminded me of like, it's a run based maybe thing. Where you're trying to get as deep as you can into these mines, collecting resources, potentially?
Each mission, you are doing something. You are collecting monster eggs. You are collecting this type of ore. You are trying to get this certain type of mushroom. And it all adds up to helping you upgrade your equipment and further progress through the story. I don't know what the story is.
Right.
But it's fun.
So the win state is like survive and collect as many eggs or whatever that you need.
Right. Yep. Usually you need five.
Lose state is and wipe full party wipe.
Yes.
Okay. And it's exactly. one of those games where you basically pick a direction you go.
Right.
There are caverns that you can break into and sort of explore within those individual caverns, but you know, otherwise you have your big guy, like Tyler said, who can drill through walls that sort of leads the way and, you know, you just hope you don't get got.
What's the layout of how this... I mean, obviously it's multiplayer focused. Can you play single player with bots?
Yes.
Like, so what are the modes, I guess I could say?
There's single player or multiplayer.
Okay.
And it's a lot more difficult to play single player because some of these missions you really need all four classes. It doesn't really work as a single player mission.
It's significantly better with multiples.
You're far too...
specialized?
Yes. To just do it all yourself. And, like, you need the digger to get through the wall quickly. You need the scout to go collect things on the ceiling. I guess not necessary, but still fun to play. You need the gunner to actually lay down some fire and stop the hordes of enemies from consuming you. I guess the least... useful, the least useful is the scout.
So
he brings light and mobility.
Is it a game that you think uses the classes in an interesting enough way that it stands out from any other class based cooperative game? I mean, it sounds like they're specialized and each person has their own way to play it. I guess does it stand out against any of these other,
like Battlefield 1?
Yeah, or something like that. I mean, this is an early access game, and most of the rest of these games on here...
Oh, it's official release.
Is it official release?
That's why it's on here.
Okay.
I wouldn't have brought it up.
So I guess there's only a single player and there's a multiplayer mode. How many missions do you think there are?
I would say probably two per zone, six zones, 12.
Okay. That's a fair amount of missions. There's no story really to speak of, you said?
Or... Not that I can tell, but I also haven't played single player. There might be more going on.
Maybe they inject some sort of tutorialization.
Right.
Do you guys want to keep it on the list for now? I haven't played it. I literally saw, I think, the intro trailer. You know,
I'm comfortable giving it a nod and having that be it.
Yeah, I thought it was fun, and I thought it we needed something else to talk about real quick.
Okay, Deep Rock Galactic. Everyone should check it out if you're into the four player cooperative.
Cheap, it's fun. It's
It's on good. Xbox. It's on PC.
Is it really?
Yes.
I didn't know it was on Xbox.
I didn't either.
I saw it on a. I think it was one of those sizzle reels at an E3 of like, here's indie games coming up. So
if it's on Game Pass.
It might be. If it's officially out now, that might be a thing. Yeah, we talked about Immortal Redneck. The only two we got really left here is Far Cry 5, Destiny 2, Forsaken. Kevin, which one do you want to talk about first?
I'm going to save the best for last.
Okay, so let's talk about Far Cry, in your opinion.
Yes.
Far Cry 5 is... We talked about it at length. It is a game where you are in Montana, and a cult of questionable political, you know, persuasion has overtaken the state.
Yep.
They believe that there is this forthcoming, I forget what they call it, maybe they call it the end or the event. It's a forthcoming nuclear apocalypse or some sort of something that is going to put all of your survival skills to the test. All of you people who make the end of the world bunkers, like, this is your day now. And you are just this guy who I think you go in initially to arrest the cult leader.
You're a marshal.
Yeah, and then you get stranded there.
Yep.
And so it is now your job to work through this map. There are four different family members in the Seed family, and each part of the map kind of is split into three. Well, the map is split into three, and you have to do various events around a section of the map to gain you know, one of the siblings' attention. And once you've done enough stuff, then you'll have a mission in which you go and you try and fight them or what have you. It's definitely an open world.
Oh yeah,
first person adventure. It has a lot of shooting and a lot of crazy stuff like hunting, but it also uses a lot of vehicles. I think it's a very beautiful game at times. Mm-hmm. It maybe doesn't have the strongest story overall. There's definitely some really cool moments.
Definitely,
maybe some cool characters. But it is this, like, weird, they're not right-wing, they're not, like, severely left. They say a lot of things like, you can't take away our guns, but to, like, nobody in general.
Yeah.
But what I liked about it is it took the Far Cry franchise, which was very much a Ubisoft, go here to this icon, do this thing, and they made it a natural move through the world, find people who will give you quests or point out new locations. It almost brought that Skyrim exploration into the mix.
Yeah, definitely. There's a lot of, you know, secondary, tertiary characters in the cast that sort of act as, like, beacons that you can go to that don't agree with the cult and just sort of want their valley back.
And then you can also, like, recruit them as well.
Yeah, exactly. And so you can use them as, like, sidekicks and,
Was it Cheeseburger was the bear?
Yeah.
There's a big-ass bear that just mauls people named, like, Cheeseburger.
Right. If you save him, he just shows up.
Yep.
And you're just like, I have a bear now.
Yep. This is my bear.
Yep.
Here's something I just remembered, but I thought it was really, really cool. It reminded me of Zelda shrines in a way. There was these, funny I brought it up in the preamble, there was these doomsday bunkers, okay? And they're spread across the map. Maybe there's, like, I don't know, 100 of them, maybe less than that, but that's what they are. They are doomsday bunkers that are essentially treasure troves of cool weapons or some sort of side quest or collectible or valuable, and they're often around some sort of puzzle. Like, an early one you find is a doomsday bunker, but it has been flooded out. And so, yeah, you can kind of, like, you know, grab a few loots around it, but if you want to get the real stuff, you're gonna have to find a way to empty out all that water and pretty much get the electricity up and running. So it's this small puzzle of searching around in first person, maybe a little bit of platforming to try and figure out how you're gonna find this switch or that. And that idea just grows upon itself as you find, you know, here's a doomsday bunker that's built in the side of a mountain and you got to find a way to rappel up to it or something like that. And I thought those were always really inventive and fun bite-sized experiences that fleshed out the world itself. I remember, Kevin, you liking those specifically.
Yeah, no, I had a lot of fun with those. There were a few that kind of reduced it down to figure out what to shoot.
Yeah.
And that's how you win it. But there were definitely some really inventive ones that required you to do a little bit of abstract thinking.
Overall, I liked the game. I liked the aesthetic that it puts out.
Yeah, for sure.
I liked the freedom it allots the player, and I am now very much looking forward to Far Cry New Dawn, which
is the
spinoff that is much more colorful and takes place on the same map. We'll talk about, I think, Far Cry 5 and best narrative. I think it stands up just because the shooting, you know, they if you're somebody who wants to use pistols or assault rifles, you can deck them out with customization. There's a ton of different things that you can buy, different kinds of weapons, or I guess I should say weapon modifiers, but you can also run around with, like, a bat with spikes in it, or just a rocket launcher or a crossbow and just do crossbow stuff.
I just want to say, with your example of the bat, this is best shooter, not best hitter.
I know, but I'm saying
MVP.
Hitman would be the best hitter.
Okay, well, you're not wrong. Hitman, you can hit people with a lot of things.
Yeah.
I was in a secret hospital in Hitman, sidebar real quick, and I had to get a doctor's outfit. And so to dispatch these two doctors, and this is why I brought it up earlier in action, you can really use whatever you want to dispatch these people. I rang a patient's, like, hey, I need help button, or
yeah,
whatever.
Call button.
Yeah, the call button, hid in the closet, and as these two doctors came in, I threw a statue bust at one of their head, and a full Coca-Cola can at the other one, knocked them both the fuck out. So very rarely did I actually use the piano wire. It's more like, oh, a soda, chuck it at a guard's
head. I thought
you
were going to, like, walk up and just clock them together.
Dude,
like,
I really
stooges.
Wish you could conk them. You could do one of those. Far Cry 5, I think, is a good step toward making a first-person shooter that feels like an open-world game, but it's not directly tied to the whole Ubisoft, like, here's your list of objectives, and you're going to have 10 races, you're going to have 20 barn raids, you're going to have 10 compounds you have to take down, and it makes it feel more organic. And the world is very beautiful. I loved Montana. Yeah. I thought it looked cool in that game. I think it stays. Destiny 2 Forsaken, I think, is the contender in this category, unless Tyler's going to fight against it.
I didn't play it. Boo.
Destiny 2 Forsaken. Kevin, you have your piece, because I talked a lot about Far Cry 5, and I think Destiny 2 is your golden child here. I also greatly enjoyed it.
Absolutely.
I just want to say that. Story, gameplay, the missions themselves, the way they changed the inventory and the way weapons worked, all of it.
But we're talking best shooter here.
Yes.
So, yeah, all that stuff was great, but the reason I brought Destiny to the table is because I think that Bungie still has a stranglehold on the shooter category.
Oh, you're talking specifically about the, like, how it feels to press the button. Yeah, no. Yep. Destiny 2 feels great to shoot.
God, there are some guns that are just so visceral, and not being somebody who's very enthusiastic about guns, having shot them, you know,
you're like, I want to shoot that gun in real life.
Yes. Like, there's one specific gun. It's not even, like, a legendary gun. I mean, technically, it's in the category of legendary. However, it is not an exotic, which are, like, the really, really rare ones. There's a specific gun that literally any old schmuck can get. It's called Trust, and it's a six-shooter. It's just, like, a classic Magnum. They call them hand cannons in this game. And it just feels so fun to shoot. On top of that, it's got, like, skins that you can apply to it to customize it. You can change it to whatever color shader you want. But I think the most unique thing about Destiny, and the one thing I will level as a challenge to you guys to beat in this case, as to what game you might think will stack up to it and why, the random roll system in Destiny gives guns attributes based on their drop. You know, when you can get two of the same gun,
and they'll be
and they will
stuff.
Play completely different. You know, one of them might have a thing called Grave Robber on it, which if you kill a creature with it, after you reload, you get bonus damage on your next couple shots. You might have something that increases your reload speed or your accuracy, or there's this new mod you can put on a gun called Prometheus Grip, where while you're airborne, you have a better target location on your gun.
That specifically with having weapons that you can modify, I think that applies to Far Cry, I think that applies for Call of Duty. I think for Destiny 2, it is more of something that you would have to invest the time into to really, like, decide what you like.
Right.
And similarly, like in Far Cry, I think in Destiny 2, you can play through without ever paying attention to any of that. And that just can be said the same for Far Cry 5, but Far Cry 5 is also the same. You can put a modifier on there and now you shoot explosive arrows.
So to counterpoint that, I will level the fact that each and every gun feels different in Forsaken, in addition to the fact that you can get those random rolls. And yes, it will take a little bit more time to farm those weapons if you want a specific roll. However, any gun is capable of being the best gun in your arsenal because you can upgrade them accordingly. So you can make it the strongest, you know, power level gun in your arsenal if you like hand cannons over auto rifles, over scout rifles, over whatever.
I agree that they allow the accessibility for you to kind of build your kit as to how you want to play, and that is definitely a nod towards it, but I don't think the customization level or the role system of Destiny 2's weapons would maybe give it more points when you compare it to, like, the quests in Far Cry versus the mission structures in Destiny. I think, for the most part, I cannot think... No, that's the original vanilla campaign. I can't remember, beyond a few story instances, any major quests that stood out to me that were being, like, awesome. Like, the story was fun to play, and I think the gunplay is what holds it up, but there's a lot of other areas in where it falls flat in the questing. So I think the points that it earns for having, like, a really dynamic gun system is then kind of lost in the fact that a lot of the quests are repetitive. I didn't play the raid for it, so I can't speak on the raid. But I did like the multiplayer.
Gambit.
So Gambit is, I think,
far and away one of the best multiplayer shooter experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. I mean, they said, we're going to make a new competitive multiplayer mode, and then they did it. Which you can't really say in the year 2018.
The other failing of Destiny, and this has been since Destiny 1, is that Destiny is a genius level, like, intricate space opera that was completely, like, its legs were cut out from under it before it ever got a chance to shine.
I think Forsaken is when you started to see actually some of the lore and stuff come into play and actually matter, and matter in a cool way to the player, not absolutely. Just from, like, oh, I read this card and I know the very obscure
yep.
lore.
Yep.
I think in gunplay, and I think with Gambit and all that thing, I think Destiny 2 edges out Far Cry. I think Call of Duty Black Ops 4 maybe arguably offers a more comprehensive package than Destiny 2 or Far Cry 5, but I think those are the three. I mean, those are the three. We've knocked everything else off, and Fortnite, we like it, but sorry.
My issues, because I didn't get to bring this up when you were talking about Far Cry, my issues with Far Cry specifically were that despite the customization options, I still always felt like there was a best-in-slot option, meaning you could customize it however you want. But if you want to be impactful in your combat, you need to pick a certain loadout.
Well, there was that for Destiny as well. It just depended on which gun you wanted to use, which type.
I would also say, how far did you actually play into Far Cry? Because like Destiny 2, you have to put a lot of hours in to find those specific things. You have to put a decent amount of hours
in. I put a lot of time into Far Cry.
How many of the siblings,
all but the last one.
Okay, so then I guess you got far enough in which you would see the variety within the weapons.
Yeah.
Okay, so right now it sounds like you sit Destiny 2 winner. What's your runner up,
Kevin?
Between Far Cry and Call of Duty.
I have to say Far Cry because I didn't give Call of Duty a fair shake yet.
Tyler, I know you're coming in here with like fucking Bird Box
Deep Rock
challenging.
Galactic, Immortal Redneck.
Immortal, oh god damn. Okay, well, Deep Rock Galactic, I mean, we could bring into the conversation. I think Immortal Redneck, if we're counting Immortal Redneck, Immortal Redneck takes my runner-up.
Without being too punny here, I think Deep Rock Galactic lacked depth.
God, the puns.
Well, I mean, just from a...
There's no better way for me to say that.
I understand it has 12 missions.
It's a very flat game.
Okay, so... Do you not have a horse in this race then off of the three that are here?
No, Tyler? I don't care about this section at all.
And it's appropriately so. You're not a shooter kind of guy.
I'll go to the mat for Destiny.
Okay. Kevin, I mean, I gave Destiny 2 a 9 or a 9.5. I can't remember. I mean, it's a fantastic game. I similarly rated Far Cry 5 very high. I think more people in general, if we're talking about the general consensus, not just our show, enjoy Destiny far more than Far Cry.
Yeah.
So I feel like that is more in line with what other people think.
Yeah.
Yeah,
but this is SGC GOTY.
I also want to say Far Cry 5 had a really cool map edit builder mode with you could make your own like single player levels, and I always love any sort of game that allows its users to create content. And I think Far Cry, while the arcade, I think it was called arcade mode, while the arcade mode didn't really live up to all my expectations, it was very fun. And the multiplayer, while incredibly unbalanced, brought that in. So if somebody made a Call of Duty Nuketown map, you could just go into matchmaking and you would be playing on that map. So it felt like old school 360 days where everything was, you know, maybe not so polished, but... In the year 2018, it was a first-person shooter in which you were matchmaking into custom levels, and it was just about having a good old-fashioned time, not really worrying about your comp, not worrying about like where the weapons drop, just seeing what was created and what was there to play, which was a very fun thing for me. So, yeah, I would like to see Far Cry 5 win it, but I can get behind Destiny 2 as well. So, best shooter of the year 2018 is Destiny 2 Forsaken. Gerd Gerb. And runner-up Far Cry 5, with a hard mention and nod towards Immortal Redneck and Deep Rock Galactic.
Yeah, for sure.
Also Call of Duty Blackout Mode. Good job, guys. Fortnite, you suck. No, I'm just kidding. I love you, Fortnite. All right, so yeah, Destiny 2 winner, Far Cry 5 runner-up. Let's hit another spicy music real quick right here. A nice cut from the OST for Pits People. That was the town theme. I love that game. It's got so much fun to
it's
it.
Cute.
And we're going to talk about it here in our next category, Best Strategy Game. I didn't play a ton of these, but Kevin and Tyler played a few of these. And,
we sure did.
Best Strategy nominees are, like I just said, Pit People. That was the Behemoth. Is that the right name of the developers? It's a cute and cuddly, cartoony kind of grid-based strategy game. Into the Breach, which we talked about in Most Unique. Frostpunk. What kind of game is that, Tyler?
Strategy.
It's a strategy. Okay. Frostpunk, Banner Saga 3, Banner Saga 3.
Banner Saga.
Just fuck off. And Night of the Full Moon for mobile and Gwent. The good old Gwent. I'm also going to say The Witcher Tales.
Take Frostpunk right off of there.
So Frostpunk, just pretend like it wasn't even on the nominee list. The Witcher Tales, which was, remember when Gwent, they were like, hey, we're going to put out single player content for free. It turned out that single player was so expansive and it became like 30 to 40 hours. They released it as its own game. So it's like a strategy RPG game where you walk around this overworld map and then the battles are Gwent card battles. So I just want to nominate that. It's called The Witcher Tales. I forget the rest of the title, but that's a game.
Yeah.
So I would even put that over Gwent, but Gwent's also good. Boys, take it away. Pit People. I played that one. You want to talk about that first?
I played Pit People.
We all played Pit People. Pit People was cute. It was a while ago.
It was cute.
Thronebreaker.
Thank you. Thronebreaker, The Witcher's Tale. That is what I wanted to nominate.
People has fantastic music in it versus, what was the other one? Is that the one we're talking about?
We're talking about Pit People. Yes. Okay. Pit People is really... it just has a very upbeat and cheery-like style to it all.
Yeah.
It's by Behemoth. The people did...
Alien Hominid.
Castle Crashers. All those. So it's a fun... I think where it loses points is the gameplay.
Yeah, I bounced off hard, man.
I stuck through it. I beat it. But
I played a lot of it, I did not necessarily enjoy all of it.
So, Tyler, you like the... It's a passive kind of thing. So maybe if... the best thing you can kind of compare it to is like Fire Emblem, where you have different units and you move them within an attack range of the enemies. The only problem is, or I guess it depends on if it's a problem to your taste, but you don't tell your characters who or what to attack or what attacks to use. You just put them, you strategically place them, and then the AI takes over for itself.
So, they just do.
Yeah, you place the characters and then they decide what they want to do. And I thought in some situations... they would do shit that I did not want them to do, for sure. But I guess I do also appreciate how it... I wouldn't actually say that it made the game quicker to that point. Then again, I played a lot of this game in co-op, and I think there's just a shit ton more of enemies, and levels take far longer in co-op.
It's not true.
What did you... You played both co-op single player?
Yes, I played both co-op and single player. Single player has the same amount of enemies as co-op, except they have more health.
Okay, that would make sense. The guys would take longer to kill, maybe.
Yeah, that's true.
So you enjoyed the passive aspect of it?
Yeah, I liked having to understand what unit I was bringing and how it functions.
There's a lot of units.
Yeah, a lot.
Like hundreds.
You're only like 8 slots, though? You can only keep a certain amount of them at any given time?
Well, you can only have like 8 people in your party, but you're constantly collecting... That's the whole thing. You're moving around this overworld, and you're going into these battles as missions and quests. Mm-hmm. And when you complete a quest, or you discover like a treasure chest in the open world, you might unlock a new character to use. And like Tyler said, these all function completely different. There's like a robot that uses an electricity attack.
That was one of mine.
There's archers. There's cupcakes that heal you.
There's unicorns.
Yeah, there's and they have like a mortar attack or something.
Yep.
So each unit works very different, and some of them take up more space in your party because of their size.
Like the giants.
Yeah, so there's a lot of cool stuff going on there. I guess, okay, so you enjoyed kitting out your party then, yeah?
Yep. When it comes to games like this, I love it when you can recruit the enemy.
Yes.
Picking up the giant enemy ogre or the enemy unicorn, because that was a thing, or the pixie or the ghouls or the witch, whatever. And not just using the humans that you've been delegated. And like not only do you get to understand how to fight them, but you understand how they fight. Because
you're fighting at them like right before, and then you get to unlock them and use them, and you just played against them.
But like you go into it, and in their specs it says, if you do it this way, this will happen. And it's like, oh, there's a little bit more, help me out, detail.
Yeah, yeah.
To the...
Well, also you can change the equipment they have too, which fundamentally changes how they move,
right.
What kind of defense they have. It's a very complex game.
It is.
I think for it to not have the options for you to like really choose what your enemy or what your party is doing is maybe a failing in that regard. But it does force you to learn the characters and what right. they do. And I think overall it was a very funny game too. Not very many games are funny or have like a very distinct charm and personality to them.
Right.
I think it stands, and I think we're going to leave it on the list. Right. Kevin, is there anything, or either of you, Into the Breach? We talked about it a lot in Best or Most Unique.
Oh, I didn't get a chance to play this.
Is there anything that you wanted to say as far as strategy for it to fit into this category, Kev? Because we said it was like a chess-like.
I'm going to go ahead and say that...
He's reviewing the nominees. Pit People, Into the Breach, Frostpunk, not Frostpunk.
Arguably, and I do have some limited experience with some of these games, I would argue that the depth of strategy in Into the Breach surpasses the rest of them. And not in the, oh, I'm so very smart kind of way, but truly in the way where it's like, there's not one specific way to win each game, but there is certainly a way to lose each game.
It's true.
A lot of ways to lose
in
each
Pit game. People, you don't have to... save, well, you do have to save lives, but you can't.
I think that Into the Breach is far more of a puzzle game than it's a strategy game, but it is a tactics game for sure. Like,
I think puzzle implies that there is a best practice in terms of how to complete a puzzle. Like, it implies that there is, when I think of a puzzle, I think a puzzle piece fits between two other puzzle pieces perfectly, and there's no way to riff on that idea. Like, I would strongly disagree.
I think puzzles is that every element, and you have to figure out how to achieve the objective, knowing every moving part and how it plays out. I think Pit People has any game that has a random element to how characters interact.
Right.
You know, like the combat is not, you're never. I haven't played Into the Breach, so I can't speak on it, but I'm pretty sure all the attacks do a certain amount. You're not really attacking to attack, you're attacking to do an action. And so in that way, it's less about forming a party that you can, you know, is full of defense and healing and this kind of thing. It's more about knowing how you're going to push around these bugs within the very specific grid. And in that way, I think it's more of a puzzle game under the guise of the strategy.
I feel like that is an opinion that's limited by your lack of experience with the game. And that's not to shut you down. I don't think you're wrong, because the ones that you said, like, you can't just make a really defensive list. You absolutely can. There's so many different customizable things that you can do that change the formula of this game. And arguably, you know, each mission is not the same. Though you do play them in the same locations, they occur differently. Bugs emerge from different locations. They attack in different ways.
Is every mission in this game just getting rid of the bugs? Is there any other variation besides saving the... Isn't it saving the buildings, not killing the bugs?
It's never killing the bugs. It's holding them off long enough for them to give up. And so... Yes, there's all, like, one mission is always going to be, the tide is like, there's like a tsunami coming in, so you lose a row every turn, You have to mitigate that as well. But it's never a kill game. It's never like, kill all the bugs. It's survive this many turns.
But it's always because bugs are going to knock down these buildings, correct? Like, from what I understand, the whole of the form, or the whole of the formula of a mission is bugs appear, you know exactly where they're going, and you're trying to prevent them from knocking down certain buildings, correct? Because it's not about destroying all of them before the turn, it's preventing them from destroying a singular structure.
The overarching game is to prevent them from destroying the, like, high-profile energy nodes on the overworld map. When you get into the individual games... They can destroy those buildings. You can allow for casualties, you can allow for these different things to occur, but there's a specific overarching objective of not allowing those energy points to go down, or you have to try a different timeline and essentially start over.
I get that. I'm just saying that if Into the Breach is more founded in its gameplay and more tight in how the mechanics work, I think Pit People has a leg up in the variety of things you do. Like, one is you're trying to free a kidnapped cupcake. The other one is a old folks home of what is it, all like chocolate, and you have to clean out the bathrooms or some shit. Yeah. Like, I mean, it's always, it's obviously very wacky, but
the objectives are different
because in the map styles are always very different. You know, sometimes it is like a lane thing. You're trying to push through these lanes and stop these specific, you know, you're trying to push, I mean, that's push lanes. Other times it's a all-out giant field. Sometimes it is a side-versus-side thing.
And I didn't play all of Into the Breach, but I do know that it's not always just the objective of kill or survive the bugs. There are other outcomes that must be reached, whether it's... Again, it's like, you know... It's never as simple as you are stopping these bugs from attacking these buildings. It's... They're going to attack these buildings, but you also have to mitigate your losses by avoiding this particular hazard. Or,
but couldn't you say that for every, like, you're never wanting to die in any strategy?
Of course, of course. I don't know the variation of...
I just thought the whole point of Into the Breach was the fact that you don't have to really worry about the levels of your characters or anything like that, because you always know how far an enemy's going to push if they use this attack. Like, it is very much you always...
But there's a variety in the enemies, there's a variety in the mechs that you use, there's a variety in the ones that survive and get brought to a new timeline and stay the same level. Just because the individual objectives aren't as... you know, maybe robust as they are in Pit People or funny or whatever the case is, the gameplay itself in terms of strategy is definitely deeper, I would argue. Simply because you control front to back. You don't just place them in advantageous locations and allow them to act accordingly.
Yeah.
You control every movement and to the point where you have to think through every turn and the outcomes therein. Based on the move that you will do. You have all these butterfly effects that occur as a result of your actions. So strategically speaking, you have to think many moves ahead.
Well, that's why I think it's far more of a puzzle. I mean, it's semantics here. Is every time you go into the game, is it the same level, you're just playing something different? Or is it like a randomly generated thing?
They're different scenarios.
But is it the same, like you fail, it's a run-based game. Is it like Binding of Isaac?
You go to level one and it's... you know, one of these three. No, it's a varied scenario. Obviously, there's like a tutorial like leg of it where your first couple missions are going to be pretty simple.
Yeah.
And then it starts to change as you go into the different continents.
Okay. Well, Into the Breach and Pit People seem to be top runners. We removed Frostpunk. I can't really say much about Thronebreaker or Witcher's Tale. But if you played Gwent in like The Witcher 3 or even this new release of Gwent, you will like it if you like RPGs. It's not very, very much a strategy game. It's more of a card building game and a deck builder, but strategy in the same way that you have to, you know, you have different rows of characters and or different rows and certain cards can go into those rows. So I would say it's strategy, but not super tactics in the way that Pit People or Into the Breach or some of these other ones are. So I didn't really play it. I can't speak to it or put it on the list. Banner Saga 3.
Didn't play it.
I did not play it either, but I have played Banner Saga before.
Yeah, we all played Banner Saga. I think 2 was a game with gold one. Quite good. I did not play 3, but I heard it was fantastic. So is this a nod and a knock for us?
Yeah.
Okay. Banner Saga, I think the most important thing is it is a continuing story. So you start off in Banner Saga 1 and you are just trying to make this convoy of people and you're trying to go across this long land, and then Banner Saga 2 picks up directly after 2.
Right.
And I think 3 is the same. I think the reason 3 got so much acclaim is because it gave a lot of closure to the story. It realized a lot of the potential of the earlier games and so forth. So if you like really like strategy games like a Fire Emblem kind of thing with a rock paper scissors sort of gameplay, check out Banner Saga. It's got a lot of simulation or management aspects to it as well. Night of the Full Moon, you two will have to talk about this. I played it for like 5 to 10 minutes, but I only know it from a surface level. So why does it stand up in this category?
Because it's Slay the Spire mobile.
Give him a small explanation of how it works, at least.
It's a card game where you have, there are like five classes.
Yeah.
And you go through with random...
It's a deck builder.
Right.
But you don't get to pick from a pool of cards. You start out with a predetermined run of cards, and then as you play,
either by beating monsters or by finding chests or by purchasing them in the shop, you get access to different cards. There's no set dispense rate of these cards, so sometimes you will get something really strong. Other times you will get something that in a combination can be very strong.
It reminds me of Uno. Not really like Uno, like in the gameplay, but it's for a card builder where you're or a deck builder and your attacks, your cards and stuff. It could seem complex, but it's very simple. Like I started off and it's all right, fight this beginning enemy, and you get like two cards to start. It's like this one does two damage.
Yep.
This one does one damage, and then if you do any like bleeding damage over the next turn, it'll do double.
Right.
And then so you use a card, and then you'll draw one, or maybe one card will be like, hey, draw two cards.
Right.
And you're never going into it throwing a card, and it's very complex in what it does. At least not in the beginning of the game.
And then
to learn it, no.
Right. And then I would argue as you play more, and you know what cards exist in your classes. Roster, you can build a strategy based on that. As a small example,
I just want to say the same thing goes for Gwent. Just because I feel like Gwent, we're going to acknowledge and drop off this because I didn't play a bunch, but that is similar to how Gwent works.
Right.
You get cards and then you lay them out in certain lines, but only certain cards can fit in certain areas.
Right. So as a small example, there's a class called Little Witch, and one of the cards you can get is Poker Dart, which is a zero-cost mana card, and you just throw a little dart, and it does two damage, but then it comes right back to your hand, but it costs one more mana. And so every time you throw it, it comes back, but it costs more, and you throw it, and it comes back, and it costs more. You can get other cards that reduce the cost of the highest mana card in your hand, or you can get equipment that deals extra damage when you use two spell cards. So like one build I ran... where it was all card draw. So, like, every time I used two spells, I would draw another card. And then I would often get a card that allowed me to draw more
cards. Isn't this game all about being fucking Little Red Riding Hood?
Yes.
Okay, because, alright, they were like, Night of the Full Moon. I went on Google, and I'm like, alright, I'm going to play this for Game of the Year. And you're a Little Red Riding Hood.
Yep.
And I was like, alright, I downloaded it. And then as soon as the gameplay started, I was like, okay, this was the game they were talking about.
And they do a terrible job of explaining the story, but the whole thing is you are trying to choose a person to investigate by the end of the game.
Yeah, okay, because they throw you into that game with little to
nothing.
No explanation at all. It's just like, welcome to game.
But the point is, you go through and you either max out one of two stats, either courage or reputation. And based on which stat you max, you get the opportunity to investigate a character at the end of your run, who you then have to fight.
Oh, so that's where like the run base kind of
thing. So you have to investigate the wolf, or you have to investigate other characters that the...
Grandma.
Right. Other characters that you talk to the people
Spoilers,
you beat.
Matt.
You talk to the people you beat, and you know, they say something cryptic, and you get an opportunity to respond that either increases your courage or your reputation, thereby allowing you to... Usually those threads of the story follow that particular character that you'll eventually get to investigate.
It sounds interesting.
It is.
I can't wait to play it more, because we'll talk about it in another category on episode 3.
I played a lot of it.
The way this category is bouncing out, Tyler, do you have something to say?
Nope.
It seems to be between Pit People Into the Breach and Night of the Full Moon. Once again, like nods to Banner Saga and Gwent and Thronebreaker. I haven't played most of them. I played a lot of Gwent, and I like Gwent a lot, but I didn't play the standalone version of it, which was more competitive, I believe, anyways.
All right. So Night of the Full Moon, while being a good game, is probably just fun. They put a lot of heart into this game.
It has room to grow,
I think. Yes.
Yeah, it does. I really like the game-breaking mechanic of it. Like, you can do strategies that are just unfair, and it's so much fun.
Right, but they programmed that in there on purpose.
Right.
Your character is supposed to grow as you progress through the chapters. And, oh boy, does she grow. That sounded weird.
it did.
Sorry, guys.
It's okay.
But, like, she's incredibly strong by chapter 4 or whatever. And it's a good game. It's a good strategy game. I just think the other two are better.
So maybe a few months into 2019 when they add a tutorial, or maybe, like, you know.
More classes.
Yeah. It could stand up. But, okay. So.
I'm going to go ahead and say that Night of the Full Moon would definitely be my runner-up. But that's because, like I said, I bounced off Pit People hard, so I'd be willing to concede that easily. Okay. But I'm definitely going to say Into the Breach is mine.
It is a fight between Pit People and Into the Breach right now. It is...
I'm for pit people for multiple reasons.
I'm for pit people.
But neither of you played Into the Breach, right?
Correct.
I did not play Into the Breach either, yes. So I fucking hate doing it every time, but it is an SGC list.
Right.
So that is something... I guess, can you speak to Into the Breach? Like, I saw the graphics, and mm-hmm. I liked the kind of 16 to 32-bit kind of retro look. I think Pit People is more colorful or has more style in that regard. Can you speak to the music? I think that's a big thing that me and Tyler are behind.
The thing with Into the Breach is it's designed to look like a game that wouldn't have been out of place in SNES. It's got a lot of, like, really cool driving, like, electronic tracks.
Okay.
I remember the music being such that, you know how they always talk about how RPG and video game music in general is really cool because they basically have to compose something that you can listen to endlessly without ever realizing you are. And it never annoys you. That is exactly how I would define Into the Breach. It's very non-offensive. It's pretty good. It's not like, you know, the iconic music that we grew up with, but it's certainly... It helps you zone. It helps you get in the zone. I would definitely recommend listening to a few of the tracks.
Well, because, yeah, they weren't nominated for any best music, so I never really got to hear. Other people have talked about how the style and the music is good. I go Pit People Into the Breach. And I think, Tyler, you go Pit People...
Into the Breach.
You're conceding Night of the Full Moon?
Yes.
Okay. Kevin, are you willing to take the L on this one?
I mean, I don't have a choice, so.
Yeah. Sorry.
Neither of us played Into the Breach,
but we'll give it to you. I hear Into the Breach was very good, and based on the buzz around it, that's why I was very fine with it having runner-up on Most Unique. Pit People...
Tyler especially, I implore you to play this game, because I really think you would enjoy it.
I think this would be a Tyler game, for sure.
Yeah, I'll do it. I don't have it, but I'll do it.
I'll try it out, too. Everyone's talked about how good it is. But best strategy game of 2018, we're going to give to the early access by Behemoth, Pit People, followed up by the very solid and very time-travel-y.
Wait a second, that wasn't released yet?
What? No, I think it actually got its full release in 2018. Ooh!
I bounced off it hard. So.
Take out the Googles, because if this thing was like full release 2017, I could say...
Full version was released March 2018. Okay. We're good.
Yeah. That's what I thought. It was early access for quite a while.
Oh, no.
I didn't play it until they were done with early access.
Battle Block. That's the other one.
Battle Block Theater is what Behemoth also made.
That's a good one.
Best strategy game of 2018, Pit People, followed by Into the Breach. I know people will disagree with us on this, but it is a show list. Into the Breach is solid. And I think that's going to be it for us on this episode.
Two solid hours.
That's another 2 hours. We will be coming back with an episode 3, potentially an episode 4, depending on how I want to do the spoiler talk. We just want to give a few shout outs. This week, you know, we're not going to do the whole recommendations, but I'll throw one out. Watch the Fyre Festival documentary on Netflix. That's a fun one. Guys, remember we played the mystery song?
Yes, we did.
At the end of episode 1? Yes. Guess who fucking got it? Can you guess? Take a wild guess.
Kevin Trask.
God damn it, Kevin. Every time. So good. Kevin, shout out to Kevin. One of the best Kevins. He's actually probably better than the Kevin we got here. I'm just kidding, baby.
We'll debate that next time.
Okay.
Hey, we can talk about it. Kevin, for winning that or for guessing that, I'm going to give you another level. I don't even know what level you are at this point. I think you're like 25. You're 26 now, bud. Good job. We're going to do another one. We'll play another little silly. It's not silly. It's actually a really beautiful song. So turn up your volumes and get ready for the heartstrings on this one. If you can guess what the song is, leave us a comment. We'll give you a shout out on the next show. Kevin Trask, I swear to God, if you're using like the Google, like, what is this song? I will smack. No, I wouldn't do that. Next episode is going to be a packed one, guys. Assuming we don't go too long, that will be the Game of the Year episode. We'll discuss Game of the Year. Things like Best Narrative, Best Mobile Game. You got Best Multiplayer. So many awesome things. And guys, thanks. Thanks for sticking through. It's been 2 hours. Does anyone have anything they want to say before we knock this one off?
I already said my cow thing, so no, I'm good.
Yeah, Tyler. It's always weird, guys, because normally we go through all like the game facts and all that, but we were just here. You just heard from us. You'll hear from us in a week. We leave you with this beautiful song. If you can guess what it's from, leave us a line. Thanks so much. Imagine a world completely underwater. Stay spicy. All the games are here. Bye.
You never get that right.